Everyone, this is John.
Wales.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be our 2022 review show. So what we do in years past is we've gone through just kind of the lineup of games throughout the significant ones that we feel are worth talking about for the year past. And so there's quite a few to get through here. We're not going to like spend a significant time on any particular game, but you know, just take stock of how the year went. And in years past, we've also like graded the year. I have lost all track of what grades we've given previous years, so we're just going to go into this.
I don't even know how. I could give an arbitrary one. Like, it is, by the end of this, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Right. We're not sending Nintendo a trophy, although we could, and they'd wonder why.
Oh, now I want to.
You guys want to jump right into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
So the first...
No, I think we should wait another 10 minutes.
Vamp a little bit?
I think I should tell you that last night I did trivia.
Okay.
And the last question was, in chronological order, list these four events that happened in 2022.
Ooh. Has this podcast helped you? Can I keep track of...
I'll tell you, as a team, we didn't get it right.
No, I'm sorry to hear that.
But I think that we were generally on the right trajectory. Would you dare?
Yes, please.
Play this game?
Yeah. Okay.
I bet you there's no way in God's
name. No, we're going to nail it. We're a team, Wes.
Oh, we're a team?
Yeah, we're going to nail it.
Carry me.
Okay.
The four events were, I'm trying to recall here, it was the NFL draft.
Doesn't even know the question.
The NFL draft, right, was the first one.
Sure.
The start of the Ukraine-Russia war.
Okay.
The conclusion of the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial.
Oof.
And the Will Smith slap.
I was not paying attention to the Johnny Depp trial at all. However, I think the Academy Awards are usually earlier in the year, like March. So I think we go with that first. The Ukraine war started up, I think it was in April. And I remember this because they delayed Advance Wars.
Yeah, but when did it... Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's not over.
I was about to say, well, when did it end? I was like, that's wrong, right?
I think we go...
Because I was thinking of the Amber Heard trial when it ended.
Now, unless... I don't know if it, like, started in April or... But they definitely... It started, like, April or before because they definitely delayed Advance Wars.
I can Google this.
No, we're not going to... Come on, we can do it. So I think we go Academy Awards, Ukraine... The NFL draft is like in the summer.
I never know when that is.
Before the season starts, but I have no idea about this Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing. I have no clue.
Okay, January, February, March, April.
May is next, then June.
Maybe May or June?
There's like 12 of them, man. There's a lot.
I know, right? There's so many to remember.
I mean, maybe. And then when did you say Ukraine?
I think Ukraine is early in the year.
So that was April-ish.
I think.
Maybe Ukraine NFL Heard, and then what was the last one?
Academy Awards. That one's first.
Oh, that one's first.
I think that one's first.
Okay.
So we're going to go...
I think that's the order.
So we're going to go Academy Awards, Ukraine, Johnny Depp, NFL Draft.
No.
Damn it.
Sadly, that is not correct. You're wrong on a couple of things. And this is what we got wrong were the order of the first two.
Mm.
Russia-Ukraine was first.
Mm.
Okay. I thought I could have sworn that was in March. That actually occurred February, like late February. Like
they invaded in the winter?
Yeah. Well, as winter was ending.
Mm.
The Oscars, I assumed, happened in February. I thought the Oscars happened way earlier than they do. The Oscars, if I remember the exact date, that one was March 27th. Mm. NFL draft happens in April, like late April into May. And then the Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing ended in summer. So like, I think it was like, I don't even remember the exact date on that one, but it was like June, July. Mm.
So it's that far before the season that they do the draft? I guess that makes sense because you can get your players acclimated.
I don't think it's like long after the Super Bowl, but...
Right, it's not long after the Super Bowl, and they start OTAs typically like in July.
What's an OTA?
Organized Team Activities.
Sure.
Practice.
Okay. Yeah, the one where they expect the players to show up.
They go to SeaWorld.
it makes sense to have it like that far before the season, though, because you're not like...
Yeah.
You get along with them incorporated into the team and like learning the team systems and the plays and stuff. Whereas like in baseball, the draft is in the middle of the season because they're going to spend 6 years in the minor league. Who gives a fuck?
It's actually a good point. People bring that up where there's sort of a fatigue that happens in the NFL with players because like, you know, the really good players, they played college football, played all of those games and then played into, you know, typically a bowl game. Then they had to go to the combine and prep for that. And then they got to do OTAs, and then they got to play a full
It's always something. The guy who's in a quiet movie theater eating nachos.
I feel like every time Wes
does this,
he's going to just find a new thing to bring that's annoying.
It's a bag of candy corn, he's got guys.
Those like hand clappers.
He's going to get one of those things with a ball that bounces back and forth. Steel ball. Metronome.
Oh my god.
No, Wes, that's gonna make so much fucking noise.
Alright, let me get a plate. I'll put someone on a plate, alright?
Now you're leaving.
God,
oh my god.
I'll be right back.
Wow.
But like, it is like interesting, like put things into perspective. Like we didn't like line up any like, events over the year that to kind of put things into a timeline, but you know
I think we nailed the big things.
Right.
The Oscar. You can still hear fucking
Wes. The other room. But yeah, like it's we had an election. Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Only the Democratic Party can take a victory lap when they lose the House of Representatives.
Yeah, I mean, but still, you really can't blame them for that. The actual percentage of voting of Democrats on average across America was up.
Which is good.
Literally, the reason why they got those seats is because they gerrymandered the fuck out of Florida and Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they have those seats. Right now, here we sit in 2023, where they just failed the 10th attempt.
Oh, did they try to
elect the Speaker of the House because Republicans hate each other?
Did they try to go against it? I thought they were delaying till the 7th.
No.
Oh, my God.
I'm reading here the headline as of 3 hours ago. Kevin McCarthy fails for 10th time.
Amazing.
As concessions he made towards that
I want
20-ish.
I want this to go all year, man. I want, like, to see them fall on their faces over and over again. I want it, people to get tired of hearing about how many times he has failed. Yeah. Because everyone, this isn't new for the Republican Party. They've always been a bunch of goobers and assholes. Everyone needs to see.
And this just proves what every progressive has said all along, that they have no intention of like governing.
Nope.
They don't want to lead.
Nope.
They want power. They just want power, and they want to enrich themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is just so clear that they can't even agree with each other on that fucking thing.
Yeah, you know? And they've
Akeem Jeffries got the most votes. He's a Democrat. Because the Democrats can at least decide on a person.
They just need to like somehow finagle the rules to where like whoever just gets the most, and then they'll have a Democratic speaker.
Whoever has the quote unquote plurality.
Yep.
Whoever's got the most.
Ah, that'd be so funny.
Should we just restart this episode? I feel like we've gone a million different directions.
No,
none of which
fuck it
associated
all.
With like what we're supposed to.
It all stays about. In video games, everybody.
Yeah, okay. Candy corns in it, and you know.
Actually, I don't think we told everyone what you were eating.
I mean, candy corn.
So let's start in January. I'll just go through the list here real quick, and we will stop at whatever game we feel like revisiting. Picross S7, Windjammers 2, Banjo-Kazooie came to the Nintendo Switch Online, N64, The Company Man, Luminous Avengers 2, Record of Lodoss Wars, Dila in the Wonder Labyrinth. That's in the running for the best name. And
one
more
time through, that's a lot of words they put there.
Record of Lodoss War. Delit in the Wonder Labyrinth.
Jeez.
Oh, sorry, I added a word. And the word I added was the. And of course, the big one, Pokemon Legends Arceus.
I'm familiar.
Yeah. Okay, guys, I like have any shots that you want to fire at any of these games? I do have some things I want to say about Arceus.
Yeah, I'll talk about that.
Way.
But I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about.
I think, like, especially in the benefit of hindsight, it is really interesting to me the way that game was received really generally positively, as opposed to the way that Scarlet Violet has been received, which I still think generally positively, but with like a lot of the caveats, you know, when it comes to like technical performance and stuff. And Legends Arceus wasn't a technical marvel, but I think the way that they approached the catching system was like so novel and satisfying that it really like captured a lot of people. Like, with this this new take on Pokemon that everyone was so eager to get. And I think Scarlet and Violet also is a really, not necessarily new, because we did get like Legends Arceus, but this really like expanded idea of what a traditional Pokemon game can be. But for whatever reason, the technical hurdles that game has yet to overcome is much more of a sticking point with a traditional Pokemon as opposed to a spin-off game like Legends Arceus. Arceus didn't have the same sort of baggage of being like the standard bearer. So generally, like, I think will be remembered a little bit more positively.
So actually, there was a recent video I watched about the performance issues and the complaints people have about Scarlet Violet. And they said, when they were doing this breakdown, I thought that was really interesting, because it's a conspiracy theory built in.
Oh, wonderful.
It's delightful. It's fact, but then it gets to have a conspiracy theory.
I love it.
The fact of the matter is that if you were able to jailbreak, essentially, and overclock a Switch, the performance is fantastic of the game. The performance of Scarlet and Violet is held back by system, like hardware-imposed limitations. They don't want to overclock, because if you overclock, it's just like a PC. PCs can do it. Any console can do this, right? They have intentional barriers set in that prevent the computer from essentially overheating and exploding itself, right? You just don't... It's like you can't just always drive, you know, with your foot all the way on the gas, right? So that's just bad for the car. Same way, it's like bad for the hardware of the gaming console to be overclocking. But if you do turn... If you basically increase that threshold and allow it, all the performance issues go away.
Mm.
They basically made a game that was meant to perform on a system with better specs. There's your conspiracy theory. We are 1 year away from getting a new version of the Switch.
Now, the other...
The Super Switch or the Pro Switch?
The
4K other, Switch.
They're not doing a Switch Pro. it's not happening.
They made screens. There are screens at a warehouse.
Right, Bloomberg, who has people familiar with supply chains.
And he's never wrong.
No, but that was the theory. The theory was that this game's been in development for a very long time. They were just probably told... Well, the conspiracy theory states that they were told that there would be a new version of hardware for this, and that if you build the game to those specs, it'll be able to run accordingly. That didn't happen. The Switch has been such a success that they've delayed releasing any new hardware.
This isn't like if you build it, they will come kind of situation, though.
Not just the Pokemon game. A lot of games are kind of having a hard time on the Switch is having a hard time with a lot of these high end games. There is a lot more demanding performance from the games that are coming out now.
Now, I think like there is reason for speculation. Like, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, like, this game like seems like it should be able to run better. Maybe there was like some sort of plan to do an iterative version of a Switch Pro, but that got moved to the side, canceled, delayed, whatever, what have you. I think the... So this game should be performing better because there should be better hardware. I think the two major issues with that is that if Nintendo was going to tell anyone that, hey, we're not going to do the iterative version that you think we're doing, it's going to be Game Freak.
Oh, absolutely.
They are going to know, like, hey, you need to find a way to make this work better because you're not going to be working with the same specs that you think you are. And I think the other half of that is there are games that look and run better on the Switch than Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Games like Xenoblade Chronicles 3, games like Nier Automata. Like, both those games came out this year. Like, would those games do better like on a pro version of the console? Sure, probably. So would everything. But those games run well on the hardware that they have.
Well, that is then also being used to justify the delays with the new Zelda game.
I was just about to say, was the Breath of the Wild 2 delayed? Because
a couple times now. Originally, was supposed to release in 2001, then got pushed to 2002. Sorry, 2001. It was supposed to come out 21 years ago.
And if we can revel in the conspiracy theory of it all, then that's exactly what we would say. That they don't want to have the egg on their face that Nintendo's dealing with for releasing a game that's got some jank to it.
Could be.
Delightful jank, I call it. I love this Pokemon game. It's the best.
I do too. Even like the everything that everybody's complaining about. I had a customer come in there, like, we're just talking about Scarlet. I was like, oh, did they fix it yet? I'm like, it's fine. Like, I gave him a tone I should not as an employee of the store. Like, it's fine, you.
Get out of my store, motherfucker.
Swear to God.
But yeah, back to Arceus.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I think that, yeah, you know, it's obviously not going to look and feel like Breath of the Wild did. That was an experience crafted in many, many years in the making, and this Arceus game doesn't even want to be that thing.
Right,
it's trying to do its own thing. And it's cool that we get something that is simultaneously feels right, feels so much like Pokemon, but it's different. It's not the same thing. It's not 8 gems and, needing to be the... the greatest in the world. You're like a time traveler who's
just taking
fights with Arceus.
You have to take down the evil or opposing organization.
Yeah.
And they've done different like Pokemon games in the past, you know, like the rescue whatever.
Snap.
Yeah. And Snap.
Mystery
and
Dungeon.
Like, but this is like
Pinball.
This is like a spin-off of like a mainline game, because it still kind of feels like that, because you're still like catching them and doing like...
It still has like the familiar mechanics.
Yeah.
Or so, like Pokemon Let's Go.
And this works so perfectly. Mm-hmm. It's a fun spin-off that...
Yeah, what they really needed to do was make a game that was just really fun to go and capture Pokemon, and they nailed it.
Yeah.
Move on to February.
Did you mention the game Gunvolt Chronicles Luminous Avenger IX2?
Yes.
Damn, that's a title.
It is a title. It is indeed. It was pretty good. Like a fun little Mega Man clone kind of thing.
And that's Luminous Avenger. That's not Luminous Avenger 9, right? That's Luminous Avenger lowercase I capital X.
Yeah, Luminous Avenger IX.
Yes. I went to a YouTube here, and I did look at quick gameplay here, this Record of Lodoss Sword,
yeah.
Dita in Wonder Labyrinth. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's not a bad looking game.
I didn't know about this game before.
Our buddy in the Discord group, Kevin, played that one, really liked it.
It looks good. I may take a look at that one.
Let's see, February. February, we got a long list here. Ollie Ollie World, Earthbound and Earthbound Beginnings, notable C-tier franchise, possibly D-tier. We'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah.
Getsufumiden, Undying World, also in the running for best name. Kingdom Hearts on the Cloud, fellas. Yeah. Eglia Rebirth, Ocean's Heart, Voice of Cards, The Forsaken Maiden, River City Girls Zero, Monarch, Soul Cresta, Edge of Eternity, and The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask for the Nintendo Switch Online expansion for the N64.
I need to play through that.
Am I reading this right? Something called Cyberpunk 2077 came out?
No, that was
for PS5 and SX. I guess it's
Xbox. Probably got a PS5 release.
Oh, was that when they did their next gen release?
They probably did PS5 release delayed. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If I had to take a guess, I don't know.
Did they ever put that back up on the PlayStation Store?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I have a physical copy.
But the only game that I really wanted to talk about for this month, despite the really long list, is that the little indie game Ocean's Heart, which is a game that I really ended up enjoying. Kind of a take on top-down 2D Zelda, but doesn't really follow the formula of like here's your order of your 8 dungeons like a top-down 2D Zelda would. Adopts a bit more of like a Breath of the Wild sort of formula, where it's you can kind of go wherever you feel like and pick up quests along the way and finish the quests when you come across the solutions to them. I think one of the more interesting things about the game is that there are times where you would go into a dungeon or even a mini dungeon without even realizing you were being like, just like an extension of the overworld. A bit like Majora's Mask, how when you're in the swamp, like you have the Woodfall Temple, which is your dungeon, but you have to have like the swamp area where you have to solve those puzzles to even get into the dungeon. It's not just like, here's just terrain you cross to get into the dungeon. There's stuff you have to do.
Yeah, you gotta find the witch and get the potion.
Mm-hmm. Skyward Sword does something similar to this as well, where you have to figure out how to even get to your dungeon location before you can get there.
You cross the sand to get to the ship to fight Mike Wazowski.
Wow. You gotta kill Mike Wazowski. But yeah, I think that's a game that should definitely be on people's radar. Maybe look out for a sale or something, because I really had a good time with it. Any other things in February we need to address?
I had the list up 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, my list has every game from every console, so it's tough digging through to just find the Nintendo ones.
Well, let's skip.
Yeah, keep going.
Let's skip over to March. And in March, I think there were another handful of high-profile ones, including games like Far Changing Tides and Triangle Strategy. Oh, we also got Azteca Forgotten Gods, Chocobo GP, Dot Hack GU Last Recode, Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, The Cruel King and the Great Heroes, a really interesting looking indie game, Rune Factory 5, and the big one for the month was definitely Kirby and the Forgotten Land. Guys got anything we need to address there? I played 3 of these games.
Yeah, if you highlighted, I remember the Cruel, now I know where the Cruel King was. That's an interesting idea.
It's got an interesting art style. Did you ever play that one?
No, I have not. I forget why. I think it's just because it was...
I think it like came out and it was pricey. Like, I probably would have jumped on that one if it was, you know, $15 or $20. But I think it was like $40 when it came out. But Far Changing Tides is the sequel to a game, Far Lone Sails, which is one that came out on Switch the year previous, in 2021. Really cool game. Really dug that one. Triangle Strategy, another one that I liked. I never did do a second playthrough, because that's one where, you know, you have four different endings, and like the optimal one you can get on your first round playing through, but you're not likely to. And then Kirby and the Forgotten Land. That's one that me and the girls spent a lot of time in. They even, several times, ended up playing by themselves. They wanted to play with each other and not me, which I was very sad about. But, you know, that's what children do when they get older. But yeah, like really one of the most like ambitious Kirby games in quite some time. Because Kirby, you know, usually makes very quality games. You know, it's what is that, an A-tier franchise? Is that what we decided for Kirby?
I believe so, yeah.
Always really quality 2D side-scrollers, but it's been a while since they tried something that wasn't, you know, 2D side-scroller, using some sort of like a touch control gimmick. So this one, I think it was the first time since Kirby and the Crystal Shards that you were moving around like in a 3D space rather than just on a 2D plane. Lots of cool power-ups and big boss fights. The hard mode, in quotes, was actually, you know, decently challenging at some points, especially like the final boss. The final boss playing on hard mode was a big old pain in the butt. So, big thumbs up for Kirby. Let's go to April.
Cool.
MLB The Show 22, you guys. That's a Sony developed game.
They made a game.
Yeah, they sure did.
As I understand, that's one of the best selling games on the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And for years and years and years, it's been the PlayStation exclusive because it is a Sony game. Mm-hmm. So interesting that that one went multi platform this past year. Also, Chrono Cross Radical Dreamers Edition, noted bad game Chrono Cross. It's not good.
Yeah, you were unkind to that one.
Wow. Deserved it.
Yeah.
Deserved it.
Think of the kids, John.
13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim, as well as Trains of Ruby. Trains of Ruby is a really neat like little bite-sized Metroid game. That's a really interesting one to keep an eye on. And Nintendo Switch Sports was out in April as well. Not a complete game when it came out. They're still adding content to it. Just this past month, back in December, they added the golf. And I think I spoke about that one really briefly. And Mika really got into the tennis for that one, so much so that she, like, we had to like move the couches back in the living room because she was running around the living room because she thought running in real life made her character run in the game.
That's good to have.
I didn't tell her otherwise.
Were we ever so young?
There was a game in May. May was a really dry month. And it was Aiden Chronicle. I think I misspelled it in the notes here. Aiden Chronicle Rising. Yeah. It's a game that is a prequel to a Suikoden spiritual successor that should be out on Switch this year. This one was more like a side-scrolling hack and slash game. I have nothing to say about it. It's interesting that, you know, we get a ton of games, like a long list of games in February, and we'll have a long list of games in June and July. But for whatever reason, May was just this month devoid of much content at all.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird one.
A lot this next month, though.
Oh, yeah, going on into June, Silt, Card Shark. Wes, did you ever finish it?
I never finished Card Shark, but even though I have not finished this game, it is a game I do recommend. It's fun, it's got a little story to it, it's slow-paced, it's just kind of a game when you're like, I don't need to do crazy, I just want to like take it easy and have kind of a chill night with the game, and that's what this was, and I do enjoy Card Shark. It did a lot of interesting things. So it is a game I do recommend. I just never actually got through it. Which, you know, at some point I'll go back and do it.
That sort of thing happens. I think I would
venture to me a lot.
I would venture a guess that like most people don't finish most games they buy. Because it can be an undertaking.
I just do not. But I'm committed to Persona 5.
Yeah, if you're like, I do tend to finish most games that I buy.
It's rare that you don't finish games.
Yeah, it's the exception.
You even beat games that are like bad. Unless the game is real bad, Even if a game's bad, you get through it. But it's
a game has to be really, really bad for me to just pull the plug, because I want to like give the game a chance to
redeem itself.
Yeah, to show me something redeeming. And there have been one or two times that has happened, but typically they're bad to the end. There is a game, spoilers, Sports Story, I might not finish.
Yeah.
I might not get to the end of that game. But let's see, the Wonder Boy collection came out in June, as did Mario Strikers Wonder Battle Boy. League, Cloud Gardens, Shredder's Revenge, fellas.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Noted great game.
Mm-hmm.
You got any parting shots for it, Ryan?
Very, very cool. I liked it a lot. I thought it was fun. Yep. Kind of captured. It felt very much like the old beat 'em ups that you would be, you know, familiar with and nostalgic for, but also was a little crisper. The animations were really cool. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it gave you just like more maneuvers at your disposal. Not quite as like the same level as something like a Streets of Rage 4, but enough to where it's like a really fun brawler and really fun to play with other people.
Yeah.
The girls also got into this one for a little while.
The little objectives that you would go for when doing the playthroughs, like all the little side missions they give you within the levels.
Yeah.
You know, even that, considering there's only, what, like, I think 18 levels, maybe 15 to 18 levels total, something like that.
So yeah, sounds about right.
They came up with a lot of replayability within those. So, yeah, good stuff. I really liked it.
Ripley always wanted to play the last level. Ripley likes to see the conclusion of games.
Yeah.
So whenever like she would want to play Turtles, she'd say, like, let's go to whatever, like 16, 18, whatever the last level was. Let's go to that one. Like, okay, we'll fight the last boss again. She did the same thing with Mario Odyssey. For the first couple of years when that game was out, 2017, 2018, she would always want to fight Bowser at the end again. Let's see. We also got Neon White, you guys.
Yeah, that was for real.
What a game.
Yeah.
Got any other thoughts for on Neon White?
I didn't bother to look up a list of games that came out or anything. And off the top of my head, I could literally only think of four games. Four games that I thought were worth, like, not worth mentioning, but I was like, for certain this came out in 2022. And I think Neon White is safe to say is like my number one.
This was a really nice surprise.
This was just... Everything about this game is so inviting and so fun and just viscerally exciting to play. It's extremely challenging, but it's also so fun. It's very clever. It satisfies that Twitch gaming desire, but it's also a very puzzle-oriented game for what you're doing. It's a shooter that's a racer. That's also extremely tactical.
That's also a rhythm game.
Yeah, with just... incredible graphics, really inviting environments, and wonderful music, crisp as hell. This is like, for me, like, obviously I love my Pokemon games so much, but as a unique experience, this is like this is the best game of the year by far.
Yeah, really big thumbs up. We knew a little bit about this game because they showed it in a Nintendo Direct or two. I'm not sure how many it showed up in. But yeah, just from the visuals, I wasn't sure if I was going to be interested in this game at all. And, you know, for whatever reason, even though it came out the same day as Shredder's Revenge, I was like, yeah, I'll go ahead and buy both of them. Really, really dug this game. It was a really great surprise.
I also think, one, it's really cringy, bad anime writing. But people love how bad it is. I think that it's sort of one of those things where people really actually kind of enjoy just the camp of it all. Where it's like everything else about this game is so pristine. You know, and to have such a garbage funny story on top of it is just great.
Well, because they could be doing a parody, but if they're doing a parody, they're doing it with such a straight face that it leaves you wondering, like, is this serious?
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, maybe it was the fact that previous year, I guess in 2021, is when Paradise Killer came out, and that game was such a surprise as well. And I feel like these are both very kindred spirits, and granted, one is like a murder mystery kind of game, a detective game, and the other is, you know, Neon White.
Nothing but murder.
And they both have double jumps.
Yeah, they both have double jumps. Wow, what a delight. You know, maybe that's why I like this game so much.
Because of all the double jumping?
Jump. Yeah.
Sometimes all you do is jump.
Yeah.
Oh. And let's see, the next day, Omori came out. That was a little indie RPG that I played at the time, and I spoke about it. And, you know, as I think I liked it just fine at the time. As I get some distance from it, I'm liking it a bit more. I mean, it does have this like this really weird ending, but just like the sort of a quirky tone to the just the general aesthetic and the battle system. It's kind of like kitschy stuff, like if Amelie was a video game, but a little bit darker than Amelie, because you are dealing with some serious subject matters. But there's a dichotomy to it. So like there's this almost dream world, like this nostalgic dream world to it, where you're playing younger versions of the characters, and then there are these interstitial. Like I think like play through like three acts or something like that. But then when you close out act one in like the dream world, you have this interstitial segment where you're like flash forwarding in time and seeing the characters that you're playing as and what their lives have become, you know, in 3-5 years later or something like that. So you get and though those parts of the game, you're not really playing an RPG, you know, with like turn taking battles and the typical RPG things. You're playing a more adventure game where you're walking around and talking to characters and doing fetch quests and things. So it's good that those sections are shorter, but you do get a new interesting perspective on characters, and you can like flash back and refamiliarize yourself with the younger version. It's a really interesting game. Mm-hmm. Let's see, the rest of June, Shadowrun Trilogy, the Capcom Fighting Collections, Fire Emblem Warriors 3 Hopes, Little Noah, Sign of Paradise, Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course, and Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak Expansion. And I did play the Cuphead levels.
I did it?
Yeah. And I think I'm pretty sure I talked about them at the time. But looking back, I didn't find them as difficult as the first batch of levels. Maybe that's because I knew what I was getting into, what to expect. But yeah. Let's see, moving on into July. We got Klonoa, the Fantasy Reverie series. There's a pair of two games. Some people are nostalgic for Klonoa, these PS1 and PS2 games. I don't think they should be. Hmm. I think those games are fine. And then Fist Forged in Shadow Torch, as well as Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2. The Capcom Arcade Second Stadium came out. And Live Alive, Azure Gunvolt Striker 3, and Xenoblade 3. Wes, Xenoblade 3, thumbs up?
I guess. I mean, it's another game I haven't gotten to finishing yet.
How far are you?
Chapter 5.
Okay. Shit's about to get weird.
Yeah, dude. Shit's about to get weird. I'm aware of this, but...
How far in Chapter 5?
Like, I just got to the little islands and...
Okay.
I haven't had my little... boat very long.
So you haven't been thrown in jail yet?
No, I haven't been. I get thrown in jail.
You get thrown in jail.
Oh, all right.
And you will meet a very annoying character at first, really? But she'll get better. But yeah, like kind of something. I have a bone to pick with this game. Something that Xenoblade 1 did.
Okay.
Is that when you're in any given zone, when you discover all of like the places of interest, the landmarks and the secret areas and stuff like that, it autofills the entire map for you. So you can like see where everything is in relationship. So when you're in that boat zone that you're talking about, I forget what they call it, something like the Aerith Sea. They give it a similar name to what it had in the Xenoblade 1. You discover all of the points of interest, and I know I did because I fucking checked. It doesn't autofill the entire map. And it is a very big zone, and your boat doesn't have a very like wide cone of vision. So I'm staring at this map, and you know how much I love my maps.
Yeah. I'm literally going up and down like a lawnmower, cutting grass.
You love it more than your children.
I considered it, Ryan. I considered it for a few minutes as I'm staring at the map. I was like, do I really want to go through?
Can you just look up online or something?
Well, I mean, I could look up the full map.
That's not the point,
right?
But I already knew I discovered all the interesting things. But I wanted to paint the walls, Matt. I wanted to all filled in. I resisted. I have not done it. But now that I'm talking about it, I kind of want to do it.
Are you 100% of that game yet?
I mean, do you ever really 100% a game?
Yeah.
No, I have not 100% it. There are some super bosses that I never took down. And then there's also the expanded content. Like you get they already unlocked a new character and some new side quests, and there's going to be another piece of expanded content, I think, toward the end of this year, where they give you like some new narrative, stuff. So I'll probably get the expansion when it's all available rather than like pre-purchasing things.
Yeah, it's weird when they do like little tiny things to a game like this, because I mean, it's a game you invest tons of hours in, and then like months later they add like a side quest that you can do, and you're like, I don't know if I want to go back to that game this late after it's already been out for something small like that. Like,
especially gonna come
out with DLC later, it's gotta have a chunk in it. Like, it's gotta be something. Like, it's,
yeah. Well, it's a tough situation to be in, like, for from a game developer's perspective, because you know you do want people coming back to it, if only for the sole reason like to keep people interested. But there's already so many other games coming out. Like, I wouldn't like, I'd rather play new things than continue to play Xenoblade 3, because I've already put 160 hours into it. But if I wait until all of the content is already out, which I'm going to, I might forget exactly how the battle systems work. So I'm going to have to do a refresh. So, you know, you partition out the content so that people stay engaged with it and don't, like, get into a situation where they're thinking, well, I've put it off. I don't even remember, like, what was happening or even how the battle systems work.
Yeah.
Which I will say, I think we've talked about this when we spoke about the battle system, comparing Xenoblade 2 to Xenoblade 3. Xenoblade 3, I think, is hands down just a more technically competent game. It runs better, things load in better. It's just, I think like the overall like character design, especially, is just a more cohesive game, a more consistent game in terms of the style.
The story's a little bit more solid. It flows a little better. Xenoblade 2 is kind of all over the place. You don't really know what you're working towards in it. You're just
it's
this sword person for some reason, and you gotta do something.
And she's got a dual personality. And I think things like, especially when it comes to like the character designs and the art styles, it's much more scattershot, because they did bring in a bunch of different artists to do character concepts. But when it's kind of like the inverse when it comes to the battle system.
It's too much.
Xenoblade 3 has a ton of different mechanics, and it's never like ramping up to get to the one final thing. It's just like
there's different ways to do the same thing in other manners.
There's three or four things that you're doing that is kind of like the end state of your battle. Whether it's the Ouroboros or working up Noah's best sword. Oh, wait, you haven't gotten there yet.
I already know about it.
Okay. But in Xenoblade, or doing a chain attack, in Xenoblade 2, you are working to put the orbs on to get the chain attack to finish them off.
I do prefer Xenoblade 2 as a whole more than 3. Yeah? I do. Yeah, I really enjoy 2. It's definitely, it's up there as one of my favorite games, period. It's just a very good game.
Really, really like it.
I really like Xenoblade 2. 3 is fantastic. I mean, if you haven't played it and you play the others, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Except Ryan.
Yeah.
He's not allowed to.
Well, at some point, he's got to play Xenoblade 2.
Stop. Don't you do this to me.
I think you'll be more positive on 2.
I think you're wrong.
It's okay. You can step out of the room when we're abusing
it. I'm gonna.
It was almost the John and West show.
But all right, we'll pull the plug on Xenoblade 3. We'll stop torturing Ryan here. Really cool game. I really dig it.
Right, you can stop clawing the walls. You're fine. Your fingers are bleeding. Stop it.
Live Alive came out that month as well. Just a quick word about that one. A really neat game. Really cool. The game that they remade and released for the first time in North America. In August, got Cult of the Lamb. Did they ever fix that game?
No. I haven't played it, if they have. I know that they had DLCs for it.
So. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Don't worry about that.
They were releasing DLC before the game got the game running up to snuff.
I mean, you had some bad luck. Mine ran generally fine.
Yeah, no, mine was just a total mess. Just constantly crashing and bugging out, not working, soft blocking.
But other than that, how's the game?
Hard to tell.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was stuff I liked about it, but the first thing I'll bring up is the fact that the game barely runs.
I didn't have any problems with it. I had 2 soft crashes, and like that was it.
That sounds like a couple of problems.
It is a couple of problems, but I mean, it's not like the game is unplayable. Like, it's just, I just reset
it. Lights your switch on fire.
I mean, also, like, frame rates are terrible on it, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's very easy to, I mean, you know, I think if you are the type, the thing is that they give you this stuff. They give you all this stuff where it's like, build this giant thing, have all of these villagers, do all these crazy things with your character. And if you try to do that, you're going to get about 5 frames a second.
Mm.
You know, like, that's just sucks. Like, just to make the game run better towards the end, I was intentionally just making it so I only had a hand as many as I needed of the villagers.
Do you think, like, that was intentional? Like, let's have it run choppy so they have to kill their people?
Oh my god.
That's diabolical.
Well, I mean, because there is no real, like, killing them. Because you can always bring them back. You can bring them back over and you can revive them and then sacrifice them right there again.
I had this one villager because they get, like, these veins on their head after you revive them. And they got worse and worse the more I revived them. Oh, like, it got to the point where I had this one villager who just walked around and was pretty much, you could just look at his eyes and they were screaming, please kill me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no, no. You're with me for life, buddy.
Existence became painful for them.
Yeah. You're with me forever, buddy. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, again, there is some fun to it. It's sort of like if you make a really, really simplified version of Animal Crossing and smash it together with, like, a really, really simplified roguelite battler. The roguelite battler was just way too easy.
Yeah.
You could just fly right through that thing. You wouldn't even think it was appropriate to call it that.
I think it was a game that
barely ever die.
It was a game that was trading a lot on its style.
Yeah. So, the further I get away from it, the less I like it. I really honestly feel like I enjoyed it at the time, and I'm so pissed about how buggy the thing was when I played it. If it's better now, great. Ultimately, it's like, yeah, whatever. I mean, I would say go play Animal Crossing. Instead, go get Hades and go get Animal Crossing. They do the same thing.
Play them both at the same time.
I do agree with that, but there is something enjoyable when you grab a person through a dungeon and this little pentagram shows up under his feet, it floats in the air, goes, oh, it's this big, happy, stupid smog on his face, and just plummets to hell. You're like, yep, let's go, buddy, off to... The game's a lot. I enjoyed it. I'm generally positive on it. I don't think... There's certain things about it that I... There's a lot about it that I really like, but there's a couple things I wish they did differently. Like, if you suck at the roguelike aspect, which you say it's super, super easy... I now feel like I'm bad at games because I kind of struggled with it at times.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got my ass kicked. But I ended up progressing so much with my village that I was like, I still have 2 more things to do with the roguelite aspect, 2 more boss areas to go through and everything. And I got, like, nothing to fucking do with my villagers. Like, they're all well-fed. I got buildings up. Everybody's stupid happy. I got one guy weeping in the corner seeking death. And everything was generally okay.
And you will not give it to
him. No, I will not. Like, everything was all right. And then it was like,
I remember talking about this because it was like, it's almost like they should have gated things off until you did more of the roguelike things.
Yeah. And what they did was there was an overall map that added other things, but they didn't really change the game much.
Mm.
And by the time you got to certain ones, the thing they had granted you would have been really handy early in the game. Like, there was this brainwash thing to make everybody more devout for a certain amount of time, so it was able to, like, boost your faith intake. Okay. But at that point my village is, like, fucking done, and I'm like, I don't need any more faith and stuff. Like, I'm drowning in it.
People
right
believe
now.
In me enough.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, this is a completely pointless ritual.
Well, yeah, there was one that you could do where basically no matter how bad you were to them or no matter how awful the conditions were, they wouldn't worship you any less. They wouldn't. Wouldn't reduce. So it was sort of like a get out of jail free card to just, like, don't do anything to help them, make them work twice as hard, go run into the dungeon and do your thing and just die. Go days over you're supposed to and die, and who cares? And come back and, like, all of that stuff should, you know, have really hurt them, but it doesn't matter to them. They're fine.
Yeah, like there's things they did right, but they didn't map it out well. About, like, if they just put in some roadblocks and made you work towards things, it would, instead of feeling like 2 separate games, it would be one more coherent thing. But yeah, generally I like the game. It was funny and goofy and everything. It was great.
Yeah, sometimes a really, like, quirky or funny style can carry a game through,
and that's really, it really did.
Let's see, another game for August, Blossom Tales 2. That's a game that I think I might have dragged a little bit harder than maybe I should have at the time. I generally liked it. I think that it was a game that I think gave you a little bit too much to do. Like, there are these things, like, where you have to, like, collect a lot of flowers to do some certain quests, or do some fishing if you want to do all these quests. It should have been more focused on just kind of being a Zelda adventure rather than giving you all this side stuff and exploration to do. But then also in August was Kirby's Dream Buffet, the little spin-off racing game. That was really it for August. Kind of a slower month, like May. And then in September, we got Temtem, fellas.
I own it. Oh. I have not.
Do you really?
I do. I own it. It went on sale. I was like, fuck it. It's $30. Who cares? It's Pokemon that is all double battling, and I really like double battling, and Pokemon has so little double battling in the actual game. There's one gym in Scarlet and Violet that's double battling.
Yeah, hardly
fucking
any.
Fucking it.
I can't think of any double battle trainers in Scarlet and Violet.
That was it, just the one gym. But Temtem is all double battling. I'm excited to get to it.
Someday.
I have not even unwrapped it yet because Persona 5 is taking up all my time.
Understandable.
And I do not want to walk away from this because I won't get back to it. And I want to get through this game.
Well, we'll circle back to Persona 5 in a minute here. Splatoon 3 also came out in September. Had a really good time with that one. Not really much to add about it. Dio Field Chronicle was also out. That one is nominated for Best Video Game Character Names because they're tremendous.
Yeah.
And also No Place for Bravery.
Weatherford Fartravius or something.
Walter Quinn
Redditch. I didn't even play the game and I know the guy's name. Walter Quinn Redditch.
Her lady's name, girl's name.
Oh, Walter there you Quinn. Go.
She ended up being like a foil character. She's in your party for a while and then becomes the villain.
Really? That's fun. Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. So I'm pretty sure I said this at the time, but the problem with Dio Field Chronicle is had like this idea for a battle system, and it was just the one idea, and it's the entire game for 30 hours, just kind of playing the same battle over and over again. Neat idea. They needed to add some variety, some tactics to it, like give you more characters, give you different parties to work with. No Place for Bravery and Legend of Heroes Trails from Zero was also in September, but over in October we got Nier Automata, No Man's Sky, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope, Persona 5, Bayonetta 3, and Signalis. Wes, where do you want to start?
I mean, you might as well just go in order. I mean, this is Nier Automata. I want to get to this game.
Thumbs up, yeah. I've been reading up on it, and there are some people that think it runs better than the PS4 version. I think it runs comparatively to the PS4 version. There are times where in the PS4 version it chugged a little bit for me, and there are times in the Switch version it chugged a little bit for me.
Would you recommend I play? Because I have both systems, and I will be game to it.
It depends on how you intend on playing. Like, I think it is a game that works better on a TV than it does handheld. So unless handheld is really important to you, I guess you could go with either one. PS4 controllers die very quickly. That
I have a 10-foot extension cord to my 6-foot cord.
God, you have to plug into. Oh man, how plebeian!
Yeah, I mean, I just plug it in. I mean, it's right there in the room. Like, I can walk to my kitchen with my cord, and still it's fine.
But it's a really interesting game. How it mashes up all these different genres and swaps between them so fluidly. It's a nice looking game. It's got some nice open environments, even though you're not really interacting with very much at all. Battle system's very good. It's got a variety of weapons, weapon fighting styles to it, which are all very cool. So you can kind of, like, this game is kind of what you make of it. You can swing big swords around. You can be, like, more agile with katanas. You can use spears. I do like using spears, so that's really fun. But yeah. And there's all that fan art out there. You guys should take a look.
Fan art for Nier Automata.
No Man's Sky, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. Wes, we both have this one.
It's joy. It is a good game.
You're having a good time with it.
I do.
How far are you?
I can't quite remember. I'm almost done with, I think, the second to last place.
How many are there? There's five, six?
I'm guessing there's five. There's the beach, then the snowy mountain. You got like the autumn mm-hmm. woods thing, and then you have like the weird archipelago islands.
Yeah, the floral. Flowing. That's the one I just got to.
Yeah. And then I think after that one is like the boss world.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I don't know. Something may happen and still goes further than that.
Yeah, the map opens up and you go to the moon.
Yeah, possibly. You put on a wedding dress.
And you marry a frog.
Yeah. But that's my guess, my uneducated guess. but I'm at that... You just got to that world, right? Mm-hmm. There's a boss fight that actually gave me a little bit of trouble later on in that world that I enjoyed, even though it took painful for me to get through. It literally took me like 4 or 5 times, and it's not a quick level. Like, it takes a minute. Mm-hmm. So it got to the point where I was like, fuck, like, I don't have 30 minutes to try this again. I'll come back later. Like, it was...
Yeah, there was a point the other night where just, like, getting late, and I was in the autumn planet, and it was getting late, and the only thing left to do in that area was the Bowser mm-hmm. fight, where you first get Bowser.
I thought that was a cool fight.
And I was like, well, I could stay up and try to finish this, but I really don't want to be up for another 20 minutes, so I guess this is my stopping point. You do get to save everywhere, which is how video games should work. But I guess we haven't really talked about what this game is. It's a tactics game, like kind of a blend of real time and turn taking, because it does give you a lot of things you can do when it's your sort of phase of the fight. So, you know, you get into these tactics.
Especially in this one opposed to the first one. The first one, I feel like there's just a lot less you can do on your turn. This one, they give you a lot of options.
Yeah, and it plays similar to like XCOM 2. Where you have your range of movement and you have your executable actions for that given turn. And once and a lot of actions you can do at any point. You can, if your characters are equipped to do so, you can dash into enemies to do some chip damage. You can drop on top of enemies to do some damage. But every character has you have your gun, and once you execute your gun attack, then you're no longer able to move around. But before you do that, you can move, you can backtrack, you can switch to a different character, switch back to them, move around again. So it gives you a lot of mobility, especially since characters can jump off of each other and boost, so you can get a bigger range of movement. So, you know, there are times where, you know, you can run ahead, do an action, run back, let someone boost off of you, run forward to where they are, boost off of them. So you can do a lot of locomotion just within a given turn before you tag to the enemy.
Yeah, those levels where, like, get to this spot are typically, like, the easiest levels, because you're like, I just cross half the map in a turn.
Yep.
I'm going to pop the one spark that turns me invisible and just take my time and walk my ass over there. Like, that's...
So what you don't have that is in the first one are different, like, weapon attributes that will do things like inflict status ailments. Like if you burn an enemy, it will do chip damage, but also cause that enemy to scatter and may or may not end up in a position that's disadvantaged to them on the next turn. Or do things like, one of my favorite was the honey status, which basically just immobilizes. They can't move the next turn.
The honey was cool.
But instead... you're upgrading damage through like a skill tree, but every character has their own specific skill tree and skills. Peach can throw up a shield, Rabbit Peach will heal, Mario and Luigi have an Overwatch, that sort of thing. And every character has their own and different things that they can upgrade, whether it's things that will do like their damage output, their locomotion, upgrade to their special skill. But then there's also the sparks. And that's how you're doing things like inflicting your status ailments or adding an elemental attribute to your attacks. And so far where I'm at in the game, everyone can have 2.
Yep.
I don't know if that ever expands, maybe.
Nah, not so far.
Which kind of makes sense because you're afforded 2 actions per turn, whether it's like using a spark, a skill, or your regular gun attack. Mm. But having these sparks will do things like add... a shock attribute to your attacks, or burn or splash, any sort of like the basic sort of RPG elemental.
Or do that in an AoE, or there's also like ones for crowd control. Like there's one that literally screams and they flee from you.
There's like tactical ones, like doing things like driving enemies away, like the scream, or doing things like you mentioned, turning you invisible, and so you're unable to be targeted for X number of turns.
I really like the ones that create enemies. There's one that creates one of those really big guys, and there's one that creates a ghost. And I use those ones a lot.
Nice. I don't think I've gotten either one of those yet.
Really? You should have gotten the big guy by now.
Maybe that's something I needed to backtrack for.
I think he's in the pumpkin spice world.
Okay. So, yeah, there's a few things in that world that I haven't gotten to yet. I don't know. I might need to move away from that one and then backtrack to it, because... I was at a loss for what I was supposed to do next. But yeah, it's a game that can be loquacious at times. It does like to talk to you. I'm skipping a lot of the text.
It's nice because the big thing with the first Mario Rabbids was there wasn't like side fights or like mini like levels and stuff like that, where it was kind of like one coherent game and every level was pre-planned out and everything like that. And so by the time you hit to a certain point, you're expected to be at this level. And so the whole game was kind of balanced out. On this one now, there's like little enemies you can dash into and go into a random encounter and stuff like that. So there's a lot more just random fights that are really quick.
Right, right.
And that, I think, is both a benefit and a hindrance, because at the same time, I'm kind of sick of just dashing into random dudes floating around. But when I get to the levels that are like planned out, they're just, there's a lot more depth to them and they're just a lot more fun.
Yeah, so the random, sort of like they're not random encounters because you can see them on the field, but I know what you mean. They're yeah. just like the small fights, and they're usually clearing those. Like once you fought one, you can kind of clear them in a turn.
Yeah.
Because it's usually kill these couple of enemies or clear the field, and once you've developed some proficiency, they're nothing, and they don't really yield a ton of like experience or currency. But, you know, sometimes it's kind of give you, like, side missions. Defeat this many of this enemy, and you'll get a little thing to collect a story bit or a new skin for your weapon. So, you know, it's worth engaging in at times, but it's really like those scripted fights where the game is really going to offer you something unique. Mm. Yeah, I'm liking it so far.
It's a good game. Yeah. I definitely recommend it. Ryan, you should get it. Mm-hmm. Or just borrow one of ours.
Let's see. Here we go. Another one. Came out the day after Persona 5 Royale.
Yeah. This game, dear God.
Yeah?
This game.
Go on. It has
absorbed my life.
Good.
I don't know what my family looks like. It's just, I feel like I've put 80 hours into it and I'm on month 4 of 12. Like, what the fuck? Like, I don't...
Well, you made the halfway point in like 40 hours.
God, this game is huge. And it's... I feel like I'm watching an anime and the actual gameplay are commercials. Like, it's just... I'm watching a movie. I am positive about this game. I'm really enjoying it. I want to stay... I hope I stay in on this game and don't like slip away like I typically do. Hence why I have an open Temtem, because I don't want anything to distract me away from this game. Yeah, I don't even know where to start with this.
There's a lot
crazy game,
and I might have spoken about this one when I played it on PS4. I never finished it on PS4, but I have it for Switch as well, and I've started it up. I'm still in the first palace in April, so I have not played much of it. But there's a lot of things that you are managing in this game. And I think what Persona 5 does really successfully is have all of these things work together to like matter to each other. So like you're saying, like you're playing through a calendar year. And within this calendar year, you're playing through a year of this life of this person who is new in this city, has to develop these new friendships with the people he's going to school with. And basically like... solve the problems throughout this world. Sort of like the really simplistic version of what's happening. And in Persona, there are things like you can do self-improvement. You have your own personal attributes that engaging in different activities will increase. Like your intelligence or your courage.
Guts, proficiency, kindness, and charm.
Yeah, and those are pretty typical of Persona games. Sometimes they call them different things. But and... increasing your personal attributes will widen the field of people you can interact with and build up like your social links. And interacting with other people will net benefits in the game. Like if you're building up friendships with people who are in the RPG battles with you, it will benefit you because they'll be able to perform different actions in that fight. They'll be able to save you from a critical hit. They'll be able to do a follow-up attack for you.
And do status ailments. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little things that they do.
Yeah. And doing things like building up your social friendships with people who don't go into the RPG fights, so these kind of like people popular throughout the world, will give you time to do other things throughout the world that will maybe then help you build up your personal stats or build up other types of friendships. So,
or even still help you with the combat. Like, for instance, if you befriend the doctor, then she gives you discounts with purchasing healing supplies.
Yep.
This game really likes just drowning you in. I have so much of that shit. And then you got your little guy who manages the fan site or whatever in the game, Mishima, I think his name is. And he increases your overall experience gained. So I really went heavy on him, so my backup people that I'm not tackling into fights are still getting more experience and keeping up, so I don't have to keep
just swapping
through and everything like that. I can just kind of use who I want for particular situations and not worry about that.
Which is important, because anytime you enter a new dungeon, they call them palaces, there's going to be a general pool of the different types of demons that you are encountering in there. And having the correct party configuration will help you just dispatch of them quicker. So as long as you're keeping people leveled up, you know, you'll be able to have the correct party up to snuff.
And then you have the creepy teacher. Right? You got, the, dear God.
Have you been engaging with that social link?
I'm debating if I want to keep going. She's like level 2 or 3. I'm like, I'm disgusted and fascinated by this. Like, I just feel like I need to keep going.
So Ryan, just for some context here.
Strap in for this. This game is Japan all over the place. Japan threw up all over this game.
You're a high school student. You're a high school boy. I don't think you can choose the gender.
You're like 17. You can't choose your gender now.
And you're at this new school. You have a homeroom teacher. This young woman who is an adult. She's a teacher. And she's going through, like I'll spoil her story for you a little bit, Wes. She's going through, like, some financial trouble. She has a family member who needs money, so she moves.
She's ill, so she needs to do, like, medical procedures and shit.
She moonlights as a maid, but not necessarily a maid who will exclusively come to clean your home.
I see. Interesting.
And you can hire her.
And that's how you increase your
social rank.
Yeah, your confident rank, which is what they're called, confidence. Yeah, yeah.
You become better friends with your teacher. And, you know, they don't engage with anything like sort of tawdry, but still, like, you're
she able calls you master and stuff like that, because that's how the company works. You're like, I'm not okay with this. Like,
yeah, it's not explicitly like, they're not breaking what we consider like any sort of
they do mention at some point there's certain services I can't do because you are a minor. I'm like,
you've brought it up, you've opened up that box. And I think there are characters that you can romance. I don't know if you can romance the teacher. I
did look this up because I wanted to see if it was worth investing in going through this. And, you know, the benefits she gets are kind of like, she gives you extra time in the day to do other activities.
So when you're going throughout your day, you have to spend some time in school.
So what you're telling me is that if I exploit a sex worker, I'll get a marginal benefit in an RPG.
Right. So what'll happen is
the way God intended it.
She'll like if you are in class and she is the teacher that particular time, you'll be able to like slack off and make materials for your dungeon crawling exploration.
Or read a book to boost a stat.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Because you are aware of this information, you're able to exploit that information too.
That's pretty funny.
But there is a romance with her. I don't know to what extent, but I think it's like the benefit you get like that is she gives you a massage after you come back from metaverse or whatever, and it helps you. I don't know. It's weird.
With any of like the romances in this game, they're not like showing full penetration.
But it's soft. It's soft.
Right. Like,
it's not... It's insinuated.
but there are characters you want to maximize the social link that you have with as many characters as possible, because that will net you benefits when you're going to fuse demons together. And this game, you know, Persona Shin Megami Tensei often draw comparisons to Pokemon in that you are hiring a lot of demons to your aid to boost your prowess in these RPG battles. But it's different from Pokemon because your demons do level up, but at a certain point they will stop learning skills, and it's usually very quick, and they level up slower than you.
And they're not like they're going to like lag behind hard. Mm-hmm. So at some point you'd
it's just encouraging you just to keep merging them all together.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's like in the most gruesome way, and it's completely unnecessary. Like they throw you see two guillotines, and you see them through the holes in the guillotines, and then they throw a sheet over and wrap them up, so they don't have to do a different animation for every single one. And then you decapitate both of them, and their spirits flow and create a new being. You're like, this is completely honest. I just unlocked the gallows, and I just hung a demon in order to strengthen another demon. I'm like, I don't feel like I need to do this.
So this is a game series. In Persona 3, in order to summon your persona in a fight, they shoot themselves in the head.
Yeah, that is true.
So it is a gruesome series. We really talked about the actual RPG battles in this. It is similar to the Shin Megami Tensei mainline series, but as opposed to like the press turn system, it's a push turn. So in Shin Megami Tensei, if you exploit an opponent's weakness, if they're weak to fire, you will gain an extra turn for yourself. It'll sort of like stack a turn at the end of your Q line, so you get an extra one. In Persona, what you're doing is trying to exploit opponent weaknesses in order to knock them prone. And when you knock them prone, you'll be able to do a big all-out attack where all the characters like rush into like a big like combat cloud and just beat the shit out of everybody.
Or you can also talk to them to like give me money or an item, or
you can extort them,
or you can, that's how you get them to join you and catch them like in a Pokemon sense.
Mm-hmm.
Does get tiring because I just got to this one fight where there's this weird like Anubis dog thing with a scale, and it's the tough boss in the area of this palace that I'm in. And in order to kill him, like I had to do like 5 or 6 of those like team fight things after knocking him prone, which I had to do that through status ailments and not a weakness. So I mean, that fight just took so fucking long, and I was just watching this fight over and over and over again. I'm just like, dear God, just die.
Yeah,
like,
that's the thing about Persona games, is a lot of the boss fights end up being battles of attrition.
Yeah.
So in something like Shin Megami Tensei, in the mainline series, if a boss has a weakness and you're able to exploit it, you can work through it quickly. And also in the mainline series, A lot of the strategy comes from also being very defensive, like knowing what a boss is going to do and specking out your party in order just to wall them. You don't really get that opportunity as much in Persona.
It's interesting because, I mean, they have a lot of those abilities of like lower this attack and lower this defense and boost this. I'm not doing that. I'm just exploiting weaknesses. That's really it. I'm guessing that a later games concerned fights. Like, right now, I have 2 Personas on me that don't have any elemental attacks. They're just there for, like, I have one that hits really hard and one that just drops status.
Mm-hmm.
Having
buffs and debuffs will be important in the back half of the game.
Because
there are times where you are just going to be using regular physical attacks against bosses just to save on MP. And just being able to raise your attack or lower theirs will be ideal.
Yeah. But I'm positive on this game.
It's
really good. There's a lot going on. There's a whole lot of strategy. It's managing which confidence you want to level up and utilizing and maximizing your time and your days.
There's a lot of time management.
It's nothing but time management. And it's crazy when you're like, all right, well, I have this evening. Do I study and boost this knowledge? Or am I going out to talk to somebody and try to boost confidence? Do I need to focus on them right now? I got 4 more levels in this one. Should I just try to finish through with them?
But
now and then a couple of them only show up now and then, and so it's like I better utilize this now.
Like, yeah, this one person just texts me and wants to hang out, but they never text me, so do I go for this?
And it's not one that's normally
like, I've got vitals coming up, I need to boost my knowledge.
It's just so much shit going on, and it's a lot of management. And it's funny when you're on your loading screen and it's got that symbol, that picture of your main character with his hand to his chin and he's thinking, and it just says under it, take your time, and it just spins. And you're like, yeah, I need to actually sit down, pull out an actual calendar, a physical calendar, and plan out my week in this fucking game.
Are we going to make a spreadsheet of this game? Wes, you're speaking my language. Can we make maps too?
The only thing that this game makes me sad about is after I was playing this for on like hour four the other day, I'm playing this and I put the controller down and I realize that what this guy is doing in the game is how I should be living my life.
Is he going, meeting people and recruiting demons?
No, just meeting people, going out, reading a book, doing some studying, bettering myself, instead of watching this fucking guy on the game do it. Like, it's a real life simulator. I'm like, I could just be living life. Mean,
you can also, like, play video games and watch movies in Persona.
Yeah, yeah. You can.
And you should.
I just saw this, like, he's living a life I want to live. Like, what the fuck?
He's going to the movies.
He has friends to do things with. Like, this is shit.
Yeah, thumbs up for me as well. The only reason I didn't finish it on PS4 was because, like, the final boss rush is, like, five bosses that you got to go through. And I just ran out of MP and items to restore it. So,
yeah.
The only save file I had was previous. That was, like, 20 hours previous. Like, well, I guess I'm done playing this game. So,
four save files.
The only other game I wanted to mention from October was Bayonetta 3. Big thumbs up. Really had a good time with it. But let's push ahead. Let's see. November, we got Harvestella, Sonic Frontiers, Sifu, the Resident Evil 2 remake, cloud version. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, the Resident Evil 3 remake, cloud version. And a Front Mission First remake. I mean, Pokemon Scarlet Violet, that's the highlight here, right?
Yeah.
You all agree?
What are we talking about? We have two cloud versions.
Two cloud versions of really cool games. Too bad they haven't decided if they're going to remake Code Veronica yet or not, because that one's... I love Code Veronica.
That's a fun one.
But the Resident Evil 2 remake, we've probably talked about that a bunch of times before. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Super quality game. And I don't know, do we have anything else that we need to say about Pokemon Scarlet and Violet?
We have a show revolving around it, so I think we're good.
Yeah, we just talked about it last week.
Yeah. I got four more Pokemon to talk about.
Oh, nice. In December, we got Dragon Quest Treasures, as well as Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core, which I did finish. I don't know, was I with you guys when I talked about that game, or did I do a solo thing?
I think you did a solo thing.
So Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core is a PSP game, and you can tell. They did give it a facelift. It looks better. It's a pretty nice-looking game. And runs very well as well. The environments are very confined. It's a lot of running down some very slight corridors and getting into like a kind of a small room. The scale of it is just very small because, you know, of course, they're working on a PSP and using UMD as the physical media for that. It's understandable why it's not like a more large-scale game like the Final Fantasy VII Remake proper. And it's also, like, if you're just doing the critical path of the game, it's very short. You could probably work through it in like 6 or 7 hours. How they're padding out the gameplay is giving you just tons and tons of side missions. And not side missions like the good ones in Xenoblade, where you just kind of like stumble across them because you'd want to explore the area over there that you haven't seen yet. It's side missions like selected from a menu, and it dumps you into like a cross section of a section of like the main area of the main progression of the game. Kind of limits you into certain places, and you have to just take out a certain number of enemy or enemies. And it recycles the same maybe 6 or 7 for every side mission that you have to do. So, you know, if it's a game that you were like intending on playing purely portably as you're watching something, or if you're on a trip, that kind of thing could function just fine. But like on a from a perspective like you're like trying to play like this grand action RPG, and this isn't the game that you're looking for if that's what you want.
Play Nier Automata,
exactly. I think they did like adapt the materia system from Final Fantasy VII pretty well to an action RPG. You can kind of see like the really like beginnings of the Final Fantasy remake in this Crisis Core. I assume they're basing the battle system in this off the PSP version. So you can see the beginnings of the Final Fantasy VII remake from the battle system of the PSP Crisis Core. But yeah, you have like a bunch of different like builds and setups you can do. Like, okay, here I want to use my lightning magic on this build, and here's my setup for the fire magic, and you can have all of these builds are like, and here's my status ailment one, and you can use these to exploit like weaknesses of these enemies that you encounter. There's no way to swap them on the fly. So if you are going through an area, like, okay, there's an enemy over there, it's weak to fire, but I'm using my lightning one. You can't just like quick swap using like a D-pad or anything. You have to open up your menu and do it. And you can't open up your menu and swap around your build while you're in a fight. So if you get into a random encounter, which you will, there's a lot of them in this game, and you realize, oh shit, I have my lightning magic equipped, and this thing absorbs lightning magic. And even my physical attacks have a lightning elemental attachment to it. Then you have to like, well, I guess I lost this fight, and reload. So, a bit of a bummer there. But River City Girls 2 came out, guys.
Mm-hmm. I have not picked that one up yet, still. I need to.
I had fun playing with you. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. I finished it off, and yeah, they just give you, like, even more characters from the start. Like, you get to all four of the, like, kind of like your main build cast right off the start. You pick up a couple more characters fairly quickly as you progress throughout the game. They give you a ton of things to do. There's a ton of, like, side quests and collectible things that you can find. Like, we were wondering as we were playing, like several weeks ago at this point, that we weren't really finding any of, like, the collectibles that you find, like, by destroying the environment. There are side quests that you pick up throughout the progression of the game. That's like, okay, well, now you have to find all my tarot cards. And you find those by punching tables and shit in the environment and doing the destructible things.
Oh, okay.
And it's nice because what the game will do is, on the map, it will pink highlight rooms that have something in them, whether it's a collectible or like a secret exit or like some sort of objective that you haven't accomplished yet. It'll highlight that on the map. But what you can't do, which is a bit unfortunate, is I had not found a way to just view your side missions that are currently open. When you complete an objective for a side mission, it'll pop up and give you a little check mark. But if you just want to see what your side missions actually are, I couldn't find a way to observe that. But yeah, as a brawler, really, really good. Got a ton of different moves that you can unlock, purchase. And every character plays differently, which is really, really cool. There is a level cap of 30, but I did find out that your bench characters will gain experience passively. So even if you're just like playing as one character, you can kind of play through the game just focusing on one and not have everyone else fall behind if you want to get into a co-op. But yeah, big thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have rethought the way I was going through these games, because the last game on the list is Sports Story. And I don't want to end on a down note, fellas.
I'm sure we can think of something else to talk about after Sports Story.
Maybe. But yeah, it's not great. It's not great, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to play a little bit more, so I don't want to like give the definitive judgment now, but I don't think we're too off from having the definitive judgment of this game. Well, you guys, what was the fun thing about Golf Story?
Golfing, pretty much.
Yeah, I did enjoy like the story beats, because it was a fun, quirky story, but I mean, at the beginning of it, it wasn't like too much going on, but yeah, you get into the different courses and seeing different layouts and... Yeah.
So I'm about 6 hours into this game, and I've played exactly two golf courses. it's not great. It's a lot of, okay, here you're in this new environment, this new area. Go around and chase your objectives. And I'll give you like, all right, here's your first task. Find this person. Like, okay, go find that person. And there are other people along the way that will tell you like, oh, okay, here's this other thing you can do. And like, okay, here's a side objective. Fine, we'll get back to that later. You finally find the person that you're supposed to find, and they'll say like, oh, well, I'm not going to talk to you until you do this other thing. Okay, that must be the side objective I was supposed to do. So then you got to go do that, talk to some more people, and it becomes this kind of fetch questy game of back and forth to find the right person to talk to.
Did we start with this nail and now I'm ending with this live chicken?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like when you do the thing, you're like, oh, go back and talk to the person. And then they fucking move. And you don't get a map. And they don't give you a way to just easily tell, like, your objective is that way. You kind of have to just wander and hope that you stumble upon the correct thing in the correct order. There are things that I was finding, specifically in, like, the second area, is like this cave that you go into and play golf in, which is very strange. But I was finding objectives in the wrong order. Like, I was trying to accomplish things that I wasn't even supposed to attempt yet until I did the things previous, which is just poor design. I shouldn't even, like, it shouldn't even be an option to try these things until...
Even just you explaining is complicated and convoluted. Mm. Like, this is...
Yeah. Yeah, it's very opaque the way that they have this objective system worked out. The game, it doesn't run particularly well either. There are a lot of frame skips, specifically when focus changes, like, from one character to another. Like, they could be standing right next to each other, and it'll be like a jump cut, so that one character, the character who's, like, saying the dialogue is then center screen, and they'll jump back to the other one, and it's jarring. And that'll even happen sometimes when you are taking a golf stroke. The frames will jump and cause you to mess up your swing, which is bad. That's really, really bad. That, like, the one fun thing in this game could be messed up by technical limitations. There's also, like, it doesn't seem like there's as many golf options, just, like, in terms of your techniques early on in the game. I did just buy some new clubs, which I'm looking forward to using in a couple hours. That will allow me to control things like backspin. Because, you know, like in Golf Story, you had so many things available. Like, you could control, like, the pitch and the draw, like the sort of arc of your shot and the spin, and all of, like, these technical things that made it really fun to think about what you were lining up before you even attempted to take your hit. Hmm. And there's, like, none of that stuff is available from the start. And maybe as I buy more clubs, I do just buy clubs that allow me to put, that will allow me to put backspin when I'm able to play golf again. Whenever that happens. But, like, it's a shame. Like, it seems like they forgot what the fun part of Golf Story actually was, and instead just started packing it full of all of these things that people claim that they liked about the first one. Like, a lot of the praise that the first one got was, like, oh, it's like a golf RPG, which I think is a bit of a misnomer. It's like a golf adventure game where you have all these things to do, like solve a murder mystery at some point. But what Golf Story did that was really successful is all of the objectives that you had to chase around before you could play actual golf still revolved around golf. Like, go talk to that guy, and the guy that you found would then say, okay, well, I'll help you, but first do this trick shot for me. So you were still engaged.
Yeah, as I recall before, it was like you could unlock the course itself. It would be like, you know, you need to hit 5 turtles in the water with your shot from different tees that are all over the map.
Right. So,
and what made that so intuitive is that it's making you explore the course itself.
Yep.
By doing that, you're going around and you're looking at each hole individually and seeing how you'll play it for when you actually need to do the playthrough of the course.
Mm-hmm. And something, I'm not exactly sure how they did it in Golf Story, but when you're lining up your shot, when you're actually able to play golf, the camera is only, of course, focused on where the ball is going to land. So, you know, you can kind of roll around. But in order to get, like, the big view of the course in general to see if, like, that's actually the piece of the fairway you want to aim for, you press in the left analog stick and it'll give you, like, the big zoomed out view. But if you move around in that mode too much, the game just bugs out. There was a time where I had to restart a course because... I zoomed out and then tried to zoom back in and it didn't refocus on the landing point of the ball. And then I tried to zoom back out again to sort of, like, reorient, and it would keep on zooming back in on this one particular part of the course. Like, that's not where I'm even aiming anymore. Why are you doing this? And I couldn't get it to stop. So I had to quit and go back into the game. I haven't experienced any hard crashes yet. Our buddy Jason in the Discord group has hard crashed 3 times.
Jeez.
Like, this game was not only, like...
This shouldn't have been the most, like, intense game graphically either. That's very strange.
All they really had to do was make like more new fun golf courses.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they tried to pack it with too much stuff. Like the sports part of Sports Story, I've played, I mean, I guess a little bit of cricket. It was more like a mini game where like, okay, this is how you play. You press this button to hit it this way. You press this button to hit it that way. And I did that, but it wasn't like following the ball. So I wasn't seeing like where I was actually hitting it. And there was no like defense. So it was just kind of like press the button at the right time and that's the game. So that wasn't very interesting. Yeah. And I did try to get my tennis license. I bought a tennis racket and it's like, go to the tennis court to get your tennis license. But it wasn't integral to the game. So I had to do this thing where I was like, okay, well, first take laps around the tennis court. I'm going to take two laps around the tennis court. I'm like, okay, now you have to do like these return volleys. And in order to be six, you have a time limit. And in order to pass this test within the time limit, you have to return volleys five times to this specific part of the course. But I wasn't sure. I could never figure out how to return them to a specific location. It was always like, okay, hit the ball back and hopefully it lands in the right place. I mean, there is no information given to me about like if different buttons are performing different swings to aim it better. I was trying different buttons, didn't seem to make a difference. I don't know. The tennis was not particularly intuitive, which is strange because it's one of like the most baseline video game sports games. Like it's hard to fuck that up, but they managed.
Yeah.
There's also like this these bike riding courses that, you know, are like a simplistic version of like Trials or maybe Excite Bike.
I was gonna say you're basically just naming off Game Boy games at this point.
Right.
There was a Game Boy tennis game that was very straightforward and very good to play. There was Excite Bike.
So it's just like Excite Bike, like when you like hit a ramp, like if you like tilt your bike down so like your wheels are then parallel to the ground, you get a speed boost. There's a biking course challenge that I got to where you got 35 seconds to complete this course. Basically, if you fall once, like that's it. And like there's pitfalls that you have to jump over. If you fall into them once, like you're basically like you're not going to get to the end. But rather than just letting you restart every time you fail, they throw you back at the beginning, but the timer doesn't reset. So if you make it 25 seconds into this 35 second course, but then mess up, it's like, okay, back to the beginning with 15 seconds left. Like, well, that's not even enough time to get back to where I was. Why are we bothering with that? Why don't you just start the clock over? It seems to be very poorly designed. So I know that we had been wondering for months where this game was and what was taking so long. They should have taken some more time to work out the technical issues and try to figure out what was actually fun about Golf Story.
Bit of an identity crisis with this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's kind of a bummer of a note to end on. Those are the games of 2022.
Well, we actually don't have to end on that. There's two games we didn't bring up.
Oh, yeah.
That both had, were two of the best reviewed games of the year that came out on the Switch, but we probably don't think of them as Switch titles.
What did we miss?
Elden Ring?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Elden Ring and God of War, both on Switch. I'm here to announce it, guys.
Oh, we got the scoop.
Reggie Fils-Aimé told me, and I'm telling... No.
Well, it's going to be on the Switch Pro.
Yeah, Switch Pro. No, the Portal Companion Collection.
Oh, that was this year?
Yeah, that came out June of this year. And Stanley Parable, the Ultra Deluxe Edition, came out.
I don't know this game.
You never played Stanley Parable?
No.
It's a great game. It's a fantastic game. It's been out for a long, long time, though.
What is this game?
It's a game that starts with you in an office, and then a narrator says stuff to you. And then it's sort of like, so Stanley was at his desk, and he was late for a meeting, and then you...
Does Stanley hear the voice?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the entire game is, how do you respond to what the narrator just told you? And you can do whatever you want. He'll tell you what he thinks you should do, or you can just deviate from it entirely. And just start with that as like the basis of where this is. It's insane where the story goes and what you can uncover just by whether or not how you want to interact with the voice telling you what to do and where to go. There's no threat in the game. There's no health bars. There's no stamina meters.
We discussed this at some point. I remember you bringing this up.
Yeah. I mean, this game has been around for quite some time. I don't know when it originally came out, but this is a game that... is regarded as one of the best narratives ever put together in a game. And really does challenge that dynamic of you know, who controls who in a game, you know? Mm. You really have to think about it it'll make you rethink the way every other narrative you've ever played in a game, and just how much you're a sheep. You are being herded through every game you've ever played in your life. And Stanley Parable, I think, at least is kind of taking the piss out of that theory.
My life in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, a cleverly designed game, a well-designed game,
yeah,
will sort of put you down this prescribed path without broadcasting it for you. Like a game like how Mega Man X, and we talked about that one a bunch of times, teaches you mechanics by putting you in a situation where you have no choice but to use them.
Yeah.
Or like what Wes, I think when we played like Mario Odyssey, there is a point when we were talking about this way back when that game came out, where you had to be a Goomba and you had to find the coins scattered on this block, and you had to actually end up underneath it and flying through some fog to get there. And how the game just, like, you think you end up there by accident, but the way that the game is designed, like, no, they led you down there. They just did it so you thought that they weren't.
Yeah. So the two Stanley Parable, it's also got an amazing narrator. The guy that's narrating this voice, or the guy that's
Morgan Freeman.
Very, he sounds like the kind of voice of a guy that should be narrating a Douglas Adams or Terry Pratchett book. Very polite, clean, British language as he's talking to you. And he gets flustered with you at times if you start not doing the prescribed path or what he thinks you should be doing. It's a great story. It came out in 2013, so almost 10 years old at this point. But it's a fantastic game that people should play on the Switch now that it's available to do so. And same with Portal. Portal came out in 2007. And I remember talking about this for years, saying, like, why the fuck isn't Portal on the Switch? And it is now, Portal 1 and 2. Like, these are two all-time great PC games. Two of the best 21st century PC games. And people should play them. And now they're on the Switch, which is fucking great.
Yep. Very good. So, do we want to do a letter grade here? What do you think?
A+.
A+. Two Pokemon games.
I mean, every year you ask this. Games. Every year I just say A+.
Wasn't it three?
I think the remakes were at the tail end of 2021.
Oh, was it? Is that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Not Scarlet Violet. Diamond Pearl were November 2021.
Okay. And those didn't move the needle on that year. They're fine, but like they weren't amazing or anything.
I thought they came after Arceus. Wow, I'm tired.
Yeah. I'm A+.
Two great Pokemon games and
Xenoblade. You guys. Oh, Neon White, fellas. Shredder's Revenge.
Splatoon 3.
Splatoon the 3rd. Mario Plus Rose. Persona 5. Nier Automata. Bayonetta. Mm-hmm. I didn't even spend much time on Bayonetta.
Yeah, I give a seat.
10 more million copies of Mario Party. 10 more million copies of Mario Kart were sold.
Kirby. Triangle Strategy. Live Alive.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I told you earlier, there's four games I remember that came out this year, and it was, you know, the two Pokemon games, Neon White, which, say it again, Game of the Year, and Shredder's Revenge. Those are my games from this year.
I mean, I'll go with an A.
Yeah.
If you guys are comfortable with it.
I'll agree.
Cool. A's every year. What a system. What a time to be alive.
Apparently, gaming sales, I don't have the numbers anymore in front of me, gaming sales in general, down 4% on the year.
Yeah, hardware sales as well, which, you know,
it's understandable.
It's year 5 of the system, so
yeah.
I mean, it's still sold out come Christmas.
I do need to issue an apology. I stand corrected. They did not release a successor in November of 2022. I thought they would.
You son of a bitch.
I guess we'll have to move the goalpost.
Yeah, and what is it? Mobile gaming accounted for 28%. Console and computer games combined. 21%. Mobile gaming is, again, bigger than console gaming.
Wait. That doesn't add up to 100%.
I don't think it's expected to.
100% of what? Like, 22% of what, then? Of software sales?
According to market research from Newton, the global video game industry had a total revenue of $184 billion, about a 4% decline year to year.
Okay.
Half of the decline was from mobile games, while console games, computer games, and browser games made up 28%, 21%, and 1% of the market, respectively. So they're saying
that half of the decline was because of mobile games?
Yes. Well, I mean, they're all decreasing to that extent.
Okay.
I can send you the link.
No,
it doesn't matter.
I believe you. I'm just not exactly sure what they're trying to claim there. Like, like they sold 4%. Like, 4% of the decline of game sales, half of that decline was from mobile games. Is that what they're...
Sure. Move on.
Okay. A+. 10 out of 10. What a year.
It is.
Next up is going to be the retro show, and it's going to be a good one, fellas. We're going to talk about...
Are we?
So many games and movies.
There's really not a lot to talk about, honestly.
I think there's a couple of GameCube and GBA games that we'll be able to bring up.
What kind of movies we got?
Oh, not much.
I know the anime version of Metropolis came out, which is really, really good. I liked that a lot.
Movie night.
There was a Jack Black movie, the one that he made with Colin Hanks.
Yeah, Orange County.
Orange County came out. I don't really care about seeing that either. And just nothing really. Oh, a horror film that might be okay. Mothman Prophecies. I'll probably watch that.
I think it's movies. Mothman.
Yeah. Irving Mothman. He's Jewish. He is from Jersey. So there's that.
Okay.
He's from Jersey.
He's from Jersey. Of course he is. He's a bit of a douche.
Yeah.
And then we'll wrap it up at the end of the month by peeking into 2023 and taking a look at the games that are coming out. One of which is going to be Fire Emblem. Wes, we're like 2 weeks away from a new Fire Emblem.
But I have so much more Persona to do, John.
Oh yeah, you got to get through that school year. Hurry it up.
Got to do it.
Hey,
I'm going as fast as I can.
Take your time, but hurry up.
My phone backgrounds and everything are Persona right now.
How deep are you in here?
I'm in this, man. I am like elbow deep. I'm stuck. I can't. I had to gnaw my arm off to get free at this point.
All the times I've tried to talk you into Shin Megami Tensei and Persona is your... Oh, I choke you.
Don't worry. I will get to Shin Megami. It's on my list now.
Okay.
I'm invested now. I'm like, this is... If they do like a remaster of the other ones, because I'm not busting out my old systems for the old ones. But
3 and 4?
Yeah. Not doing it.
But they're out on the Switch on the 19th
God.
Of this month.
Damn it. Are they worth playing?
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely going to be a step back because they are PS2 games.
I probably won't.
I think Persona 3 is a little bit harder to go back to than 4. Especially since as the Persona and Shin Megami Tensei games have continued, it has become easier to recruit demons into your party. There were points in that series where it was very difficult to just add members to your party to recruit the demons because the negotiation system was so dense.
Like, I'm afraid of it running into the situation like we did with Final Fantasy, what was it? Not 13, 12? That just came out, that came out on the Switch? Where, like, you're walking through corridors and they all look the exact fucking same and it just drove me insane. Because, like, everything looks exactly the same and I can't handle this.
Now, Persona's definitely got some more personality than that. Well, Persona 5 has more personality than that. Persona 3 is definitely, like, no, this is, like...
The same wallpaper the entire way.
Yeah, it is a dungeon-crawling RPG, and the dungeon all looks the same. Because you're going through,
not touching it.
Multiple floors of the same dungeon.
Won't touch it.
Persona 4 has more personality than that. It's not quite up to the levels of Persona 5, but at least all the dungeons aren't the same thing over and over again. You know, Persona 5 has mementos.
Yeah.
The dungeon that you're always re-entering in Persona 3 is called Tartarus. It is mementos. It's the same thing. Corridors. Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, we digress.
We do.
That's it. That's the end. Until next time.
So long.
Later.